Thanks for coming this morning, though. We have a great group of people here today, starting with Karen Gillis. Next to him, we have Andy Bagel. And James Adams.
We're married now?
I just ran out of
secret sound.
Usually these things, what we do is we announce some stuff, and then we talk to the people who are doing the stuff. Paul wasn't supposed to be here today, but he had a family emergency, he couldn't make it, so we're going to pretend he's here and just talk about it. But speaking of talking about people, we're going to start with some other people who aren't here. The first of those is Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky. We're doing a new book for us called Sex Criminals. you probably get the point from the title. We also have the first art from Matt Fraction's collaboration with Howard Chaykin, Sad by Sam. And this will be out early next year. If you like what Matt's doing with Hawkeye and what Howard is doing with Black Kiss 2, this is kind of right in the middle of those two things. We're also doing another Howard Chaykin book called Midnight of the Soul. And this is the first art from that. And that brings us to the people who are actually here, starting with Karen Gillan, and he's doing a new book called 3 with Ryan Kelly. And Karen, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Thank you.
It's okay. It's a book I'm doing for Ryan.
Basically, the idea is, like most things for a British man, they started me coming home drunk. And I sort of crashed down from my sofa and grabbed the nearest book, which was actually 300 by Frank Miller, and just started reading it. And I've always been to Spartans, it's one of my top things. And, you know, but in this moment of like drunken clarity, I was reading 300. And at the very end of it, one of the very long speeches about freedom, and it's like, at the moment, fuck a few people hunted slaves, you know, you declared war on your slave class. And, you know, I got very incandescently angry. And then the idea dropped into my head. I wanted to do a story where you inverted the Thermopylae myth. Instead of, like, 300 men fighting a million, it's actually 3 slaves on the run in Sparta, and they send the 300 after them. And I use that as a device to talk about everything in Spartan culture that interests me. So this is a full-on historical action story, ridiculously over-researched. Ryan Kelly draws incredibly youthfully evocative things. Yes, it's very different from what I think anyone's seen what I've done so far, and it's really very exciting for me.
And next up we have a new series called Snapshot by Andy Diggle and Jock. And we also have a few pages on that, but Andy, can you talk us about that?
Yeah, this is something me and Jock have been talking about for years. It's literally taken about 5 years to get around to doing it, from evolving from, you know, conversations down the pub to actually become a comic book, and now we're finally doing it. We've almost finished it. We've only got about the last 12 pages to go. It's like a Hitchcockian thriller about an ordinary, everyday nerd like us who works in a comic book store in San Francisco called Near Mint Rhino. And one day he's... As he's cycling to work through the park, he finds somebody's lost mobile phone lying in the grass, so he picks it up and takes it to the shop, and he's flicking through it, wondering whether he should, you know, keep it or sell it or hand it to the cops. When he finds that the photo album on the phone is filled with close-up snapshots of a murder victim, shot through the head, shot through the heart, little pinky finger snipped off. And he realises the phone was used by a professional hitman to take proof of kill photos before disposing of the body, and the hitman wants his phone back. So Jake, our hero, basically finds himself... He does a sensible thing. He does what anybody would do, which is basically run straight to the nearest police station. And I'm not going to spoil the twist, even though it happens halfway through the first issue. I'm not going to spoil it because you don't want to find out. Something unexpected happens. And long story short, Jake finds himself hunted by a professional killer who is betraying his own employers. So he's very well motivated to make Jake dead. So, yeah, it's about... It's a chase thriller, basically. And it's the first work that me and Jock have ever done in our lives that's creator-owned. People think that The Losers was creator-owned, but that was just a DC work-for-hire book. So it's a pleasure finally to be working for Image and actually doing something that really is ours. So yeah, check it out.
And is it a black and white?
It's currently running in the UK only in the Judge Dredd magazine in black and white. But for the Image version, Lee Lowridge is going to colour it for us. And it's lettered by Clem Robbins. So it's the Losers team all back together, right down to the lettering and the colouring too. So it's good to put the band back together.
That's exciting.
Cool. The next thing we have coming up is actually one of the guys who's here, Alesh Kock, who is doing a book of Huntington Boss called The Surface, and that's right for that. And then Alesh is actually doing another book for us too called Zero, which is going to be with a number of different artists beyond May. And then we move on to Jim McCann and his friend of Deborah and father, Janet Lee, who are doing a new book here called Las Vegas.
Hi, everybody. So, Janet and I work really organically. And she was out in LA, a animation studio wanted her to do backgrounds and then character designs for just of anything, no story or anything. But then, as happens with Janet and I, we went off on a tangent and thought of the title Lost Vegas, and which initially was going to be a all about a daycare in outer space at a casino.
Yeah,
it's just ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous, like as it sounds. A daycare at a casino in outer space. And if I were Grant Morrison, I would do that. But I am not. So no, it's a actually about our main character there, Roland, who is an indentured servant on a space cruiser, which is all just a huge casino strip. Las Vegas is a place where the highest rollers in the galaxy come to play, and then also the people who have busted, like, bet against the house and really lost are the indentured servants who wait on everybody to kind of pay off their debts. But this is actually a four-issue mini, and it's going to be a heist story. It's the one we pick up the day that Roland, who has been watching the tables and learning the system, is finally able to make his move, break out and earn enough money at the tables to get a ship and get off world. And insanity ensues and lots of aliens and fun stuff. No kids. No big kids.
I missed out on that.
I know.
Next up we have the Insurance of Ben Brom, which is James and Jim. And tell us about that.
Basically, we Jim and I had been friends for a long time in the comedy world. For those who don't know, that's a big part of my background. And we got on this big kick about imagining what happens if the apocalypse actually happens, the biblical apocalypse, with our friends, our slacker idiot, self-indulgent. Like, if you tell us we have 7 years left to live and the end of the world is happening, what do you do? And we created a narrative then that does that, pulling our two main characters, these two best friends, right into the heart of the end of times. And this has been probably the most fun I've ever had writing a book. We got a crazy German artist who everyone says looks a lot like Chew, so if that's something you're fond of, it's a bit evocative of that, but I think he's does some fantastic designs, some great crazy demon monsters, some hilarious violence and some really sexy sexiness. So if you've always wondered which one of your friends would survive a war between heaven and hell, I think you'll find one of them in this book and you'll see whether they die or not. So that's coming out in January, and you should all get it because that's a slow month for everyone. So pop this in. It's a 4-issue miniseries, and the first issue is like 34 pages of content, too, for the same $2.99. So come on board and get an insane bang for your buck.
Did you want to say anything? I talked that whole time.
That was awesome.
Great.
That's why I like collaborating with them.
The tagline is this January. What else are you going to do?
Yeah.
His whole family has a lot of problems, but Todd in particular has problems, and he's in a little bit of trouble. And this is an unusual book. If you like Chew and stuff like that, it is the artwork is amazing, and it's a fantastic book. And it is also out January. Next, though, we have John Hickman's new book with Andrew Bogan, which is called East and West. And
sure. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but Nick and I have been working together a good bit over at Marvel doing FF, and we really, really kind of synced up, and so we've been talking about doing a book together for a while. And we shot around some ideas, and what we landed on was East and West, which is kind of like a future sci-fi western where the four horsemen of the apocalypse are trying to kill the president of the United States. And as they're prone to do. And that's where the book starts, and it parts off into this kind of wonderful little journey about all the sub-segments of this country, United States. It's a lot of fun. It's, we're just now starting to get rolling on this. We're talking about April, right? This will be out in April, and they start strong next month, so we'll be really far ahead. And, man, we're just super excited about it. It's going to be good. You guys should check it out. But the cool thing right now about Image, and I just want to say I appreciate you guys so much because you guys have been picking up Manhattan Projects and all the other things that I've been doing. It's a phenomenal company. That I really appreciate is that we can do books like this, which is a ridiculous pitch, and really is just an exercise in being creative, which is the best part about doing it. So thank you guys for supporting Manhattan Projects, and thank you for supporting Secret. I know we're late on that, but the next issue should be out next month. And then the other thing that I've talked about doing at Image that I haven't, that was going to come out, it back.
Is
a book called Feel Better Now. This is going to be OGN. It'll be out in March. I'm writing and drawing all of it. It's about four psychiatrists in LA who get bored and start fucking their patients.
Literally fucking or that's
not. Actually, you can't have sex with the patient is one of the rules. There are rules to the game that they begin to play. It's me kind of doing the stuff that I did on Nightly News and Pax Romana that I've really missed doing. It's been a long time since I've been able to write or draw something. So I'm super excited for it. I'm going to do a hardcover first. Hardcover out in March. So again, thank you guys for checking this stuff out. It should be, if not hilarious, interesting.
Yeah, and actually, if you want some Jonathan's artwork ahead of that, the Comic Book Blue Defense Fund Liberty Annual for 2012 actually had a short story that Jonathan wrote and drew himself. And actually, looking at everybody here except for you, John, has a story in that annual. It all goes to a good cause, so you should pick it up.
Yeah.
comes out October 31st.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, and our last thing, as I said, we have a new Paul Philip book, which is the Salinger group off thing here. And if you're familiar with Paul's stuff, you know it's awesome. And as I said, Paul could not be here. But this is the first of a few things we're doing, Paul. This will be out in January. And with that, I think we're going to open things up to questions so that you guys can talk with these guys. And anyone who wants to, we have a mic here, we have a mic there. And don't shut everybody down by the morning.
And the thing about Helots, which is what the Spartan Slide is called, it's really cutting edge. It's very, it's not 100% sure what they were and how they operate and how they actually differ from standard chapel slides. I'm actually, I've got the University of Nottingham, who are basically the story consultants on the story. So it's like really going to people doing research to try to make this possible. And for me, in case I just read all these books, I've got all these pages of notes, and I've got all these little bits of stories, little details, little hypocrisies, and I've kind of... What's the word? The basic structure of the story is the three slaves on the run, and everyone sort of tells stories as well. So, you know, we get the action, and we get this noise as well. I've realised I'm slightly over here, you can't hear me, yeah? So basically, the device being, as they are on the run, all the characters get a chance to talk, and they talk about things they know. So you get this kind of haunted story. And that seems to work as a device, because you juxtapose, you know, there's all these great stories across several hundred years of Spartan dick wandering. You know, and I'm choosing my favourites.
Thank you. I'm a walk back. Hey, man. Hey, don't go away. Did you buy that shirt in the store?
One upstairs on the floor.
How does that logo?
Nightly News, like pretty much Nightly News number one in there.
This is the first time it is.
if you're a writer, a lot of people make the mistake of sending like an entire script or like a really long synopsis, and then maybe like they have a character bible and just way, way too much information. What I want to know is what the story is, and it's, you know, usually if you can do that in one or two sentences, like a short paragraph, and say, this is what I'm doing. And then follow that up with maybe a little bit more in-depth information. If you can grab somebody in that first couple of sentences, they're going to want to read more.
Yeah, I think a really smart thing to remember is that a lot of guys want to produce an entire comic. And if you're a writer, you know, you're usually paying some guy out of your pocket to draw the book for you, unless you have like a, you know, a true collaborator that's going to sit down and do it with you. I mean, obviously there are different limitations, but just remember that if you're going to shell out the cash, if you're a writer, you maybe want to do this, and you're going to shell out the cash for an artist, just remember that instead of doing like a 20-page full comic so people can be the next to the have a better shot because you did this finished comic. For that same money, you could do four pitches. You could do four or five-page pitches, and 5 pages is all Eric asked for. Just have a killer hook at the end of the 5th page. Make sure it's great. Be your toughest credit. And it's a much smarter thing.
I highly recommend pitching stories about British pop music.
I would also just say, in general, I always start determining what I'm actually going to chase down with my time by the people I know and trust just being like, here's an idea. And if they, and I do that to them enough that at this point they're not going to humor me. So I find like if 4 out of 5 people are like, oh, that sounds really cool, then I'm like, okay, I can, not only is that worth Eric's time, but honestly, your attention, you guys are bombarded with so many books, TV shows, internet sites, movies, everything. If I can't intrigue you with the one sentence premise at this point, I'm going to have a really hard time getting your attention to read further about how great this idea is. So generally, if you want to do these things, whatever, it sounds crass and there's brilliant ideas that will fall outside of this, but especially if you're trying to break in, it is to your benefit to go with your idea that I think excites people from its very basis. That's the best advice I can give.
Yeah, speaking towards that, just if you can find somebody, I really, really think that people should walk Artist Alley at every convention they go to, because there's always hungry artists out there, and there are really good artists out there. And Jonathan actually gave me some advice when I was first starting, but DeviantArt and Penciljack are also really good places. But then it helps when you have somebody that you can just keep bouncing ideas off of. And it just comes naturally, you know, and you don't know what it is. And also learn brevity, which I really had to learn. I think the first...
Wrap it up.
I'm sorry. The way I pitched Mind the Gap, I think, took about 30 minutes for me to say. And then with Las Vegas, I was able to do it in 2 sentences.
But the daycare, I know. You know, something else to follow on something Jim said is if you're a beginning writer, it's really important to have an artist too. Because if you send something in and it's a great pitch and you don't have an artist, it's like on one hand, I'm like, man, this is really cool. But on the other hand, I'm trying to find artists for Grant Morrison and J. Michael Krasinski and guys like that. So they're kind of like, you know, a little higher priority to find, you know, an artist for, like, thank God who's like never written a comic book before. So it's really important.
I was going to say the same thing. I used to be an editor myself, and you can tell straight away, as you said, if you're an artist, you don't want to send in pinups, you want to show narrative stuff. But for writers, it's harder because it takes a lot more time. to read through a full script, and editors are always kind of overworked anyway, and it's the submissions file is usually the bottom thing on the priority list. So I was going to say what you just said, which is, you know, if you can write, you can't draw, you know, writers and artists should hook up together, and boil it down and keep it brief. Try and tell, you're more likely to finish something very short anyway. In Britain, in 2018, we've got these things called future shots, which are like 5-page stories. If you can learn how to tell a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and a point in 5 pages, then when you get like 20 pages to play with, it's like this huge canvas. And I think it's that training ground has proved very useful for British writers, I think, especially when going to the American model. But at the same time, like it's tough for a new writer to find an artist sometimes. So I wanted to ask the rest of the panel, what places would you recommend for artists, for writers to find artists and vice versa? Are there like, you know, particular message boards or forums or whatever where it's a good place to collaborate?
We use DeviantArt.
Yeah.
We put out a call.
Yeah, DeviantArt.
I lived next door to Jan for 15 years.
I mean, in one case, I was doing my photocopied indie comics at British Commons and standing there, and one day a guy, sort of lanky, this called Jacob McKelvey walked up and just showed me his portfolio, and I said, I have an idea for a book called Phone, and we should do it. So occasionally it's just work. But look, kind of.
That's not the way I heard that story. I heard that story was you were like, you're awful. Stay with me and I'll teach you something, young man. We can go places together.
I'm not like that. The real thing is, I don't remember saying you should do photographs. The only thought, he's great, he'd be perfect for photograph, and I spent the next 6 months sort of seducing him to do it. But Jamie remembers it, I just said it immediately. So clearly my subconscious took over my mouth. But really, I said the walking artist alley thing, and if you're doing your own, you know, small press stuff, you bump into people. And if you find the right person, in my case, Jamie, your chances are incredibly magnified by doing something, being out there. For me, all the work I did before Image, which stuff you will hopefully never ever read, that was all basically, I did like a little 5-page story, and I said, I want you to do a story together sometime. And it built and built and built, and it built towards the photogram and everything else that's followed. Getting out there, getting stuff out there, I highly recommend it.
I also just want to say Decompress is awesome here.
Thank you. Decompressed, I'm running a comics craft podcast, basically where I interview creators about their books, like, why the hell did you do that panel? And it's on the internet, and listen to it.
Okay, say you're a writer.
I'm a writer.
Should we all say it?
James beat me to that.
You're a writer, you found an established artist, you've got your 8 pages, you put together your supplemental material, and you've got a proposal book that you've vetted through a bunch of professionals. How do you get 5 minutes at a con like this to give you the elevator pitch?
You wait till this panel's over.
Excellent. Thank you.
Good luck, man. Appreciate it.
I love that.
Is the guy who found the phone, is he like a military kind of guy? Is he any, because if he's going up against like a professional hitman, like I'm fast, but a bullet is a little bit faster than me.
No, that's exactly the point I wanted to have, because I've written a lot of stories with these kind of like ex-military tough guy types, you know, like the losers and stuff, and I wanted to do the complete opposite of that. I wanted to have a hero who is not at all heroic, he's not tough, he's not trained, he's just like this kind of 19-year-old comic geek who is massively out of his depth. I mean, one of the inspirations for it, sort of tonally, was the Terminator. I think Sarah Connor is such a great hero, because when she starts off, she's just a waitress, you know, she just doesn't know that the future of the human race depends on her. And so when this relentless killing machine comes after her, you kind of really empathise with her because she's completely out of depth. So I wanted to do that. And I also wanted to just, you know, write about people like me, you know, instead of pretending to be some kind of tough guy myself. Like, well, no, I'm more like this guy in this book, you know, just
so it's not like Liam Neeson.
No, it's more like Taken 2.
Yeah, he has a very particular set of skills that unfortunately all involve playing Xbox games.
Hi. I'm a librarian and trying to get my patrons into comic books, and I think the industry is something that's out there right now. One of the things that they don't
like so far is the portrayal of Olivia Cox. I was wondering if you talk about any upcoming strongly female characters whose characterization rests on something other than their bust line. We have the Walking Dead, but if they're not, they feel like there's these niches, and if they're not into zombies, they just didn't like touch it.
Okay, well, Michonne's a pretty strong female character, though.
So oh, she's great. She's fantastic. No, I'm a fan of that myself. Sure. I was wondering if you talk about any upcoming female characters who might appeal more to introductory comics readers, particularly women who might not normally pick up a comic book because it's a voice.
Mind the gap. I'm finding actually. Thank you, everybody. Actually, centers around a strong female character, and her best friend is a very strong take no bleep because serious sex sounds recording this attitude. And it's very important to me. It wasn't like I set out to write, I'm going to write a strong female character. It was just my New York experience and life experience. And so, it's got a lot of women portrayed in many different ways. There's a lot of racial diversity, sexual orientation diversity, because that's what's really out there. So, and then in Las Vegas, there's always a woman.
Is the trade out?
The trade for Mind the Gap is out. Yeah, it's at my table right now, and then it'll come out next week in stores everywhere.
And also next year, Kelly Studio Comic and Mariosa are doing a new series for us called Pretty Deadly, which focuses on female characters. It's a Western, and it's pretty different from your standard superhero.
And the third from the ground. The characters and the answer.
Well, actually, all of them are
interested. Yeah, I always find it awkward claiming that I find it trouble claiming. In this specific case, the fact that Lee is definitively an Aster, and just very much digging into her sense of identity and everything else like that. Frank and Free, the team, will when it comes out, hopefully.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what you're looking for, but in Philadelphia now, as a psychiatrist, is a. Is a sex therapist who sees men with erectile dysfunction instead of giving them Viagra, she gives them blood thinner. So, I don't know if that's the kind of empowerment that we're looking for.
She feels pretty good about it.
The part of my mind
now
that I think about
it,
that may actually work.
Sure.
Thank you all very much.
Questions for you. You mentioned Mind the Gap enough times, so finally the question sort of jumped in. At the end of each issue, you sort of write about the kind of things that we're supposed to be picking up on, or hey, did you notice this, or did you notice that? And I know by the third issue or so, you sort of write in there about how some people really liked it and other people hated the fact that that was going on. So my question is sort of, do you ever plan on going back and almost kind of getting us behind the curtains, like a director's cut, like this is all the stuff you could have seen? Or how much, because you're the one with the secret, the answer, so how much, how difficult is it to see this?
It's a two-mic answer.
Yeah. It requires a lot. No, it's a two-fold answer. No, if you've read issue 5, there is a big reveal at the end of that issue. And so now I can play with that character more and pull back the curtain on that character's involvement. And that's kind of what the filling in the gap section is going to be. And also all of issue 5 was Dane's journey. So you really get a chance to look into his history and his past up to the moment of his pivotal moment in that issue. So it will evolve along with the book, so that it just kind of keeps readers engaged, and also the artists put a lot of time and effort into all of these panels, and they put things in there that I just go, oh wow, that is really friggin' cool. And so one of them was just dedicated to the memory wall and how well Sonia and Rodine pulled that off. So, it's just a chance to pat other people
you. Thanks for reading.
Hi, I'm an aspiring artist, and I think it'd be amazing to make a graphic novel. But I find that when I make, like when I'm writing, I find certain aspects to be harder to develop than others. And I was wondering if there was a certain thing that you guys find artists to write.
Can you give us some examples of what you struggle with?
Like, do you find, you know, like character development to be harder, or like the setting, or something like that, to be hardest as anything?
Yeah. What are you having trouble with?
I feel like if you're feeling that way, you're probably right. I would say if you feel like your setting needs to change, if you ever feel like that, listen to it. Because if you think that, chances are someone outside's definitely going to think it. So, like, you know, don't be afraid to work deeper into your idea and find that you might have been wrong about what you initially presumed about it. A lot of times you'll actually get something that's more distinct, more specific, more surprising. All of those are wonderful things to have happen to your story. So don't be afraid of finding the sore spots and pushing on them harder and digging into them more. And if you want flaws, look at everyone you know and pick one. Pick one.
My friends are much better than mine. Just look at them and take them.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Sure.
I sort of just started getting into like this whole aspiring comic creation thing. And one of the things that was really hard thing for me, or at least when I first started, was like how much time and patience put into the project. And I guess it's become a personal interest of mine is how long certain things take to create, like whatever I see, pages and panels. I usually ask the artist, like, oh, how long did it take you to do a full page or a full panel? And so I guess my question to you guys, for anyone really, is like, how long does it usually take for you guys to sort of go through the creation process, like a pre-production, doing all the character designs, all the settings, all the plot devices, all the stories? To create that whole project.
Well,
as far as before you actually start creating the panels. I know it's in my head, but I'm actually curious.
I think it probably varies. For me, it varies from project to project. Sometimes, you know, if it's like a company book, then if it has to tie in with other stuff, then it's, you've already got parameters kind of set for it. But if you're just doing your own thing, like an image book, I usually have a fairly broad sense of the whole story. I've usually got a sense of how it's big, you know, how it's going to begin, how it's going to end, and then there's a bunch of stuff in the middle somewhere which I'll figure out. But yeah, I think I usually start with you get your arms around it, and then chop that up into sections, into issues, basically. Okay, like where are the act breaks? Because you want to end on a bit of a cliffhanger or a question or something like that. So it's just a question of constantly dividing it, like quartering it. You get the whole thing and then divide that up into issues. Okay, so that's issue one. And then you divide issue one into scenes, like what has to happen. So you break it into the basic building blocks of the thing, and you'll end up with maybe 10 scenes or, you know, 6 scenes, something like that. And then so I just write a little list of those, just bullet points, you know, a sentence for each or something like that. And then break that down into, like, how many pages does each of these scenes have to be? And then you add it all up and you realise you've got, like, you know, 57 pages or something. So you have to. But the more you do that, and I've been doing it for like 10 years now, and the more you do it, the more you just kind of note down, okay, that's about 3-page scene, that's about 4-page scene, and then you find it adds up to like 20 pages or whatever it has to be. You know, it just that's something that comes with practice, I think. So yeah, so once I've got that little, you know, the bullet points for each scene, okay, right, then I break that scene down into the individual pages, and then I don't necessarily break the page down into individual panels and just start writing. It depends. If it's an action sequence, which I tend to write a lot of, then I might just, you know, write a continuous flow of action and then go through it and break it up into panels afterwards and add bits of dialogue, usually, and blam, blam, blam. But if it's a dialogue scene, then I'll just write it as if it's a movie. You know, just write the movie. I'll write in screenplay format. So I'll just write out all the dialogue and then figure out how to break it up. And again, just the more you do that, the more practice you get with it, the more you'll just realise that you're kind of hitting the page beats that you need. But that's just something that comes with practice, I think. Does that make sense for everybody else?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of us work on pretty heavy deadlines. I mean, so when it's go time, you know, things get through it. But I prefer to have a couple of weeks to just sit around and think about the thing that I'm working on before I actually dive into the project.
have Janet. Yeah. And by the way, Janet Lee is right here, so she can stand up and say hi, everybody. The way we did Dapper Men was actually kind of the opposite, mainly because we're comic book spouses. And so she'll draw something and it'll just pop into my head, and as pages would come in, or in her case, wood blocks would come in, I would suddenly think, oh, this character needs to be more in the foreground. That is actually, I knew the overall story, but there's just something about that that like grabs me. And so I would sit down, and over 3 months, I wrote the different acts. So I wrote 30 pages 1 month, and as things came in, I wrote the next 30 pages, and then the last 30. So.
Hey, here's something for you guys. So what's the shortest amount of time it's taking you to write something?
An issue?
Yeah.
A day.
Yeah.
I've had to crank out an issue in a day.
Last New York Comic Con, I found myself. Somehow, my editor told me that I was under deadline for a book that didn't come out for another 8 months, but that I needed to write it right now, and so I missed Thursday of New York Comic Con, sitting in the hotel room, writing it in about 12 hours.
Only. I think that is about it.
And, oh yeah, it was a great script.
First edition of Phonogram 3, it was New York, I lost my wedding ring, which I got back. Came home, my wife was away, I locked myself out of the house immediately, without a phone or anything, just like one credit card, no keys, and then I basically wandered in London and sleeping on people's sofas until basically my wife got back in 3 days' time. And I wrote the first issue of Phonogram 3 in internet cafes when I was wandering around London that time, because it felt very Phonogram, in that kind of like burnt out, falling apart, my life is useless one. So yeah, occasionally motivation helps.
You guys are making me feel like complete amateurs. The first time I've ever written is like 3 days without me working absolutely hammered down. So I need to raise my game.
More slack,
actually. Hey, like I said before, I'm very inspired by 300 plot points of reading it. I guess that goes for all of you. Where do you go, like, to get inspiration, or are there things that constantly keep going back, like, for, any type of creative inspiration that you love that really inspire your creative process or
conference?
Take a lot of showers.
Yep.
Showers.
I literally think almost every writer I know comes up with an idea in the shower. So, or driving, yeah.
It's, I mean,
like a score.
Yeah, it's like a relaxation in blood circulation. Like, if you keep thinking at a thing, you're going to keep coming to the same point, but when you stop, your mind works around it, and the better parts of your brain get a chance to perk up. I actually find reading nonfiction is far more inspiring to me than reading other people's fiction, because I get lost in their voice, which is wonderful, and I love reading stuff by these guys, but I never put that down and go write something. If I read a book about weird science that I don't know, or about someone whose life is so different from me and their profound experience, that's far more inspiring for a fictional story than watching someone else's fictional story, and I'm like, God damn, that was really good, Kieran. I can't write ever again.
I stopped reading like a lot of nonfiction because of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it gets in the way of doing the work, because then I start doing new stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I have to be really, really careful. Like,
well, you have more things contracted right now than I do.
So I go into periods of
action.
It's like generation versus doing the work. It's just Jonathan says, if you're actually reading all the nonfiction, you'll by definition have a new idea. It's because it's X thing meets Y thing, and you put the two together, and you've got something else. And that stops you doing what you're meant to be doing. So it's very much, I've kind of written almost everything I've had an idea for currently. So I'm very much in the stage that James describes, of I'm listening to a lot of like history podcasts, I'm listening to lots of culture, and I'm going to different like art museums and stuff. Just trying to see how for stuff to generate new stuff. So yeah, it's cycles, basically.
And I can't tell you how many times I've driven up and down Ventura Boulevard at night when there's nobody there. But, there actually is like the longest strip of head shops and medical marijuana, but I don't do that. So.
Yeah.
No, they're closed. So. But yeah, I just put on a film score if I'm in the mood, and that's also what I write to a lot.
No, I know.
He bought the jacket.
No. No, because then I would write a lot of silent pages. Very long pauses.
I find that when looking for ideas, I find just basically watching the news and reading the paper, kind of looking at what's going on in the world, and there's a little switch in the back of my head that someone sometimes just flicks on and just says to me, there's a story in that. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, what it is, whether it's, I don't know, drones or Somali pirates or something like that. You say, okay, but how can I connect these things? And I'll get these single individual like little nuggets of an idea. They're not quite a story yet. It's just a little seed of an idea. And they'll all be floating around at the back of my head. And then when I'm traveling, like, you know, I find it, like, you know, train travel or plane travel, just staring out the window when your mind's free, really. That's when, or go for a long walk is good. I find that two completely unrelated like story seeds that have got absolutely nothing to do with each other will suddenly connect and fertilize each other in a completely unexpected way and add and just create something that I'd never even thought of before. And that's the point at which I usually get a big light bulb goes on over my head and I've got to run off to the, you know, find a laptop or a notebook and get it down. Because at that point, it's kind of like when you've just woken up and you're just remembering a dream you just had. But you know, if you don't write it down or tell somebody straight away, then you'll lose it. So I do, if I don't write it down and it's gone again, I had something there, I don't know what it was going. But some of my best ideas have come to me that way.
Warren Ellis always says that feels like that's the best thing about being a writer, is that moment you feel like basically you're God. And then the idea is here, the idea is very pure and very beautiful, and you feel that essential creative fire flowing through you. And he's right, it really fucking is.
Yeah. This is really more just thank you, Tim Nish. I recently got an iPad and I started using Comic Sans.
Oh, you should thank Apple for that.
Yeah. I should thank my work for that. They don't care what I download. But I've been using a lot of the free issues, as you guys said, the free first issues. So there's at least three or four books that I'm either going to start reading regularly or pick up in the series I'm going to pick up in trades. Thanks for that. So, I just want to say, as an initiative to get people trying and reading new books, really is
cool. Cool, thanks for that. Back in July, we did like the first half of the year, like all our new number ones for free. And in December, we'll be doing pretty much everything else that came out for the year. So you could, if you've been curious about anything we've done over the course of the year, you can pretty much try any of the first issues that we want to present for you. So thanks for doing that.
Hi, I'm sort of an artist who's just getting into this industry. One, is anybody available afterwards to sort of talk for a couple minutes so I can actually ask questions and not bore everybody with my 5 minute questions?
Sure, I mean, none of us are artists ourselves. Well, Jonathan, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to insult you, actually. You started that
way. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'll talk to you.
I wanted to know about how long you guys were doing your thing as far as comics before you actually managed to get one of your scripts in. But I'm actually in the process of working with an established author to create a graphic novel for one of her books. But because I'm a beginner, I'm wondering about how much time I should really allot, you know, like year-wise, before I can expect, you know, to either have enough practice to get published or look at it or yada yada yada.
Well, this is probably different for everyone. It kind of depends on what skill level. If you're very good, it very fast. If you have some work to do, Jonathan, you were an artist, you pitched as an artist and a writer. Talk about how long did it take between when you wanted to start doing it and when it happened.
Yeah, I don't know that it's a fair question because, you know, if you think about it, we've been reading and drawing little comics in our entire lives, right? So if you take that out of it, you know, when I got serious about it,
right.
I'll answer that. Robert McKee seminar. Read War of Art, and I had done like a comic book idol or something like that, and I came in second in that. That's awful. But out of that, going to put my 5-page pitch together for Nightly News. I FedExed it to Eric on Monday, and he emailed me on Friday and told me that we were going to publish it.
So it sounds like 2 weeks is the answer.
The difference was that I decided that I was going to do it and not fail, right? And so that's kind of the key. Like, if you give yourself, we're all procrastinators and lazy, and we find a thousand different excuses not to do what we do, but when we commit ourselves to being creative and know that we have to do it, then it's you know, then it's on.
Yeah.
And so it's that extra attitude.
I think it can really have a great purpose. Like when I first got into people asking like how do you get into comics, it's like, well, I decided I was going to work in comics. I mean, literally just like 1 August and that January I was working in comics. So I think that if you know what you're doing and you have the skill, it can happen pretty quickly.
Can I ask one more thing?
Sure.
What's the realistic expectation that I can keep working as an art teacher full time, which is what I do to make money? And
well, that depends on how fast you are as an artist. It's just like there are some artists, I work with guys who can generate literally 1 page a week, and that's not enough money, or not enough output to generate money to live off of. So, yeah, if you're very fast and you can like, generate work very quickly, then you could probably do both.
Do you like teaching or do you hate
teaching? Oh, I absolutely love it. And the great thing
is. And it's probably going to take you a lot longer. If you hate it, then you have a lot more motivation.
Extrapolate your life forward 10 years. If you do one page every 3 months, you will have, you know, I'm not going to do maths on stage. I'm but, you know, if you're doing 4 pages a year, and in 10 years you'll have done 40 pages, if your life has not changed fundamentally, that, you know, when people live in denial about, oh, I'll do this eventually. No, if your life continues what you're doing now, this is what's going to happen, and that's a good wake up call. I mean, people have to really do that to themselves. That's the thing. Then they have to come to that realization. And there's so many people I've known over the years who have such enormous talent, and they've done fuck all. How many mates have you been in the pub saying they're going to work on their novel, and they're not? They're in the pub.
And you have to remember, they have a harder job too.
Yeah.
You know, there's a phenomenal amount of respect which you have to this deserve. You know, you got to remember that they have the end of the harder job.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But I'm thrilled with the work.
I hate to interrupt, but we're going to these people when you go up. We're all set up time here.
Can you talk for a few seconds about the future of Morning Glories, if that's all right? But when I'm talking about it,
Is all going to be more?
Is what?
Is it going to be more?
Okay. I was wondering if you could give any more ideas about the future arcs or anything.
You'd have to talk to Nate about that. He will be down to do it at some point this weekend. So
what issue? What issue is out right now?
23?
Yeah,
23.
You told
me everyone dies in
30. For me, after getting 20 hours for me, it's going to be the issue that comes out in December, and I kind of, that's the end of the first few chunks of the book. But yeah, for me, any kind of like teasers specific to, you should really ask me.
Every month I find that Rodine has to work on its cover, so it's still going on.
I can tell you to really appreciate what's coming up. You should read The End Times of Bram and Ben. It'll really make those. It'll make that book so much more gratifying. You'll see what we're doing. I don't want to spoil it. That's a lie. I don't want to say
that. Big fan of all you guys. A quick question. About a year ago, I started reading almost all my comics digitally. One of the reasons I did was I love the transitions that were in the screen. Focus on a text box of text, hands out. Do you as writers have any input in that direction, or is that left to somebody else?
That's pretty much done by the guys who put the stuff together.
Okay, cool. Thank you.